views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network. Afternoon and welcome to today's broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is April 16, 2015. Good to be back on the airwaves with you. Got some new stuff going on. I'm kind of apprehensive about Skype. I have been putting off Skype updates for about a year now, just trying to prevent it from updating because I've had problems with their updates. So I found a legacy version. And so my computer last night installed updates, and Skype was one of the updates that it installed while I was sleeping. So I'm still trying to get used to it, and I hope it doesn't pose any problems with us connecting to guests and callers. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that this is a new and improved version of Skype. So with that said, today's program, we will continue along the conversation about Black people and homeschooling. I have been talking about that. I talked about it just yesterday, in light of these recent news reports, and not that I needed any news reports to confirm to me that Black children and non-white children suffer racist terrorism on school campuses. I didn't need these news reports, but be that as it may, there are news reports of parents who are taking action and being so strong in their action and demanding that their children human rights be respected that it is making a little national news. And that's how some of these things have come to my attention. We have reported, I would say, over the last month, at least four stories of where Black children are being harassed, being bullied, being called niggers and such. Racist terrorism is what I call it. And so it seems like there is a lack of conversation around alternatives to the school system, the public school system, that I think if most people, most logical thinking people would agree, is not serving non-white children well. Sure, there are some success stories and whatnot, and you know, despite all the odds, despite the system, some non-white children are able to achieve academically, but they are the exceptions and not the rule for the masses of our children. And so I have participated in the past in conversations about perhaps charter schools may be an answer to, you know, some of our children's academic problems, you know, Afrocentric schools where you get away from this white supremacist curriculum, also known as Eurocentric curriculum. But, you know, to me, that's a politically correct word that is used to describe white supremacy. A lot of Black people, it seems to me, are not having these conversations because it seems like the establishment Black folks are so invested in the public school system and have, you know, been fighting for a long time for Black children to be educated properly in these school systems. But I would say it's been a losing battle. We look to Atlanta with the cheating scandal case that the fact that these teachers are looking at prison time and bankers are not, and no one from involved in the Ferguson fiasco. No, teachers go to prison. But I mean, it just underscores again the problem, not only for our children, but for black teachers in the system. And so, we will be joined by a guest today, Professor Amma Mazama. She is an associate professor and the director of graduate programs for the Department of African American Studies at Temple University. She recently wrote an article that was published on the Washington Post, and it was based on some research that she had done and some others had done that shows that more black parents are choosing to homeschool as a result of this racist terrorism that their children are facing on campuses across the United States. And, you know, secondary, it seems that they are also concerned about the white supremacy curriculum. So we hope that we'll be joined by her fairly soon. And, you know, I'm also looking at the statue of Cecil Rhodes that was torn down. Did y'all see that news? Cecil Rhodes, British white supremacist, helped colonize South Africa. And he had a statue on the campus of the University of Cape Town, which, of course, is in South Africa. And students for weeks held protests. Even had a hashtag called Rhodes Must Fall to pull down this statue of Cecil Rhodes from their campus. And that should be relatable to black people here in America, as we have symbols of white supremacy all around us, on our school campus, on our nation's capital, in our federal parks. There are monuments of racist white supremacists, some who have engaged in some of the most heinous crimes that you can think of. I'm thinking about, you know, the Clemson students and their attempts to get the name of the building changed, the building that is named after Benjamin Tillman, man who bragged about killing black people. And that's not the only place. University of North Carolina, Duke University, they also had these issues with these buildings named after white supremacists, high schools all across the United States. So it's, I mean, is it any wonder that black children are not thriving in the U.S. school system? So those are some of the questions, that people are asking. They're looking for solutions, and more black families are finding homeschooling as a solution. If we have any listeners out there, if you are homeschooling your children or you know someone who is homeschooling, we'll love to hear from you. Give us a call, 704-951-5030. If you're in the conference line, you can just hit *6 and 1. That conference line number is 530-881-1400. The access code is 549032#. You hit *6 and 1, as I stated, and I'll bring you on air. So we would love to hear from you. What are your reasons for pulling your children out of school? You're a black parent, a non-white parent? Because according to some of these studies that I'm reading, it seems that within the top two, which I already talked about, is racist terrorism, bullying, whatever you want to call it, intimidation, and then the curriculum, the Eurocentric curriculum. Those are number one and number two of why we're seeing more black people look to homeschooling as a solution to educating their children. I think that the conversation does need to move towards autonomy. while I certainly can see why someone, a black parent, will want to homeschool their child, certainly understand that. But in terms as thinking in terms of community, what is the answer on a community-wide basis? Because everybody is not going to have the resources to homeschool their children, although they want to pull their children out, whether it is a lack of education of themselves, whether it is because of their work schedule, maybe working 2 or 3 jobs. But perhaps they could not give their time, but what they certainly could do is contribute financially. I do believe we have our guest on the line. Professor Mazama, is that you?
Yes, it's me.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Want to get right to it, because we have limited time with you, but I want to thank you for speaking with us today. And before we start our discussion with you about black families and homeschooling, I would like to hear your thoughts on the statue of Cecil Rhodes being pulled down from his perch on the campus of University of Cape Town in South Africa, which, that followed weeks of students demanding that this statue of this racist white supremacist be taken off campus. So do you have any thoughts on that? And is it a relatable issue for black students, non-white students on college campuses in the U.S. with, in terms of symbols of white supremacy?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad that, the brothers and sisters in South Africa, organized around that. And it's an issue that we have really all over, that we attend or we go into spaces that were not meant for us, mm-hmm. and that were really and still are very much anti-African. It's ironical in that in Africa you should have that, but you do have it very much, the names, the statues, everything, and especially the curriculum. What do we, wherever we found ourselves and ourselves, what do we learn about? So my research on black homeschooling definitely speaks to that, the dissatisfaction with the indoctrination into white supremacy in the name of education.
Now, I was reading your article, which I enjoyed, thought it was eye-opening, and it just reaffirmed to me that black people must be having this conversation. As I read all these different news stories about our children suffering, racist bullying, I call it terrorism. Certainly, if the child's terrified, then I feel like my child's been terrorized. So, been reading a lot of stories about that here lately. And this is something that has been looked at from an academic perspective, because I was reading the spring issue of the Journal of African American Males in Education from last 2014, which you linked to in your article, and it's titled "I'm Keeping My Son Home: African American Males and the Motivation to Homeschool." So this has been something that a number of educators have been looking at, it seems, going back as far as 2000 or perhaps earlier, you might know.
Really, we have been concerned with our education, the education of our children, from the beginning, and mm-hmm. the beginning, in this country at least, is after, emancipation, and how we really had to fight to have access to formal education, and it was no easy, fight, but we did wage that struggle. And, were successful, in 1954 with the Brown versus, Board of Topeka. But from the very beginning, even as we were seeking access to those, schools, there were concerns that were voiced. If you think about someone like W.E.B. Du Bois, Marcus Garvey, especially Carter G. Woodson. And that's why he started, the black, the Negro History Week, which became, Black History Month later. He was really concerned, with what we were being fed. And yes, there's physical terrorism when we are being bullied, but there's also what I would call intellectual terrorism and mental terrorism, that you go to a school every day, you spend basically 12 years of your life going there, and everybody tells you, starting with your parents, that it is very important that you go there. In fact, it's compulsory. You have no choice but to go there. And you learn nothing about yourself, that this whole schooling experience has made you invisible and insignificant. And what it does to a person, mm-hmm. you know, a black person, a black child who can never really relate, but who on the other hand is expected to really see the world and see himself or herself always through the eyes of people who have historically oppressed us.
You raised something that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, and you kind of answered it, but I want you to go into it further. You know, before Brown versus the Board of Education and Integration, I was integrated into, you know, one of those schools when I was about what, this was in the early 1970s, okay, when I was schools were integrated in Detroit. I started thinking about this, and I was like, I wonder if anybody were asking questions and could foresee the racist terrorism aspect. When we look at the photographs of these black children integrating these schools in Arkansas, you know, we got some famous pictures from that, and across the South, and just being, you know, surrounded by these white people who are yelling racial epithets at them and screaming at them. I mean, I was like, that would have gave me pause. I don't think I could have sent my children into a situation like that, which was clearly hostile. What was that debate like back then, if you've done any research?
Well, back then, I think, yes, back then, you know, I think there was like a consensus that, yes, you know, those racist bastards try to prevent our children from, you know, getting access to the best, you know, possible education, and we fought and we won. So there was this very, you know, this great enthusiasm, you know, just like for the civil rights, you know, movement and everything, that, you know, we will not allow ourselves and our children to be treated as second-class citizens. So we can appreciate, you know, the value, you know, of this idea. But at the other hand, you know, at the same time, you have people like Zora Neale Hurston, for example, who was totally against it. Mm-hmm. And who said very clearly that she saw no need for black children to be around white children. That was not a good idea. And now I think there's really this disenchantment with this integration business. Many of the parents I spoke to said it very clearly. They said, you know, integration has not worked for us. We've lost so much ground. And one of the grounds that we lost was that our black children do not have black teachers anymore. They do not have, as a result of integration, they have primarily white teachers mm-hmm. who, because we know that 85% of the teachers in public schools in this country are white, mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly female. And these people, because of the racist nature of the society we live in, have very deep biases against our children. It's sometimes difficult for them to recognize the humanity of our children.
Do you think the white students pick up on that? I mean, isn't that also isn't that also an outcome of this Eurocentric curriculum, which, again, you know, I deem that as a politically correct term, but white supremacists? Curriculum. I mean, doesn't it have a effect on the white children as well? Which would,
of course, I mean, this is all a construction of whiteness. Mm-hmm. If you go to school, you're a white child, and everything affirms your superiority, mm-hmm. either implicitly or explicitly. You are always at the center of, you know, every discussion. You are always at the center of every book that the class reads. Then when they tell you about inventors, you know, the sciences, it's always someone who looks like you. Then, of course, it's going to really convince you that you are indeed a superior human being by virtue of having a white skin. So, absolutely. Absolutely, you know, school is a very powerful agency of socialization. Now, don't get me wrong, though. Do not assume that because, you know, white people who homeschool are necessarily less racist. In fact, it has been suggested that white people got into, or many white people got into homeschooling to begin with because of racism, because they resented integration. Mm-hmm. They did not want their white children to be sitting next to black children in a classroom, and that's why they decided to keep their children home. And an experience that is often shared by black homeschoolers is how they are not welcome, mm-hmm. you know, when they go to homeschooling events.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, white people are always the majority for the most part, then they are not really welcome. And mm-hmm. they have to really endure many racist, you know, comments and attitudes. So, you know, it's a very serious problem. But schooling, you know, plays a major role. And if you think about the amount of time that children spend there, you know, they may leave their house at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m., and not come home until the evening 5 days a week, and then when they come home, they have to do homework, and it's time to go to sleep. So the parents really have very little opportunity to engage their children to see what happened to them, what's going on in their little heart, their mind, you know. And the damage is profound.
Interesting that you mentioned that even in homeschooling, here they are, and your study did show that the, I guess, primary reason that blacks were homeschooling their children is to not subject them to the racist terrorism that they had experienced or were experiencing in the system. But then you go to another system, you know, of homeschooling in which they do, you know, there is some kind of structure, there, and then they're experiencing racism there as well. Have you seen an attempt of black homeschoolers to form their own associations?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Precisely, you know, when you don't, you know, you don't really, you know, you get started, you know, and so you try to find out what's going on, you know, and you mm-hmm. find out about, you know, gatherings of homeschoolers, and so you go there. I remember very well, when I first started homeschooling, I went to this play group every Friday afternoon, you know, not too far from where I live in Philadelphia, and it was primarily white homeschoolers, and I remember that they were talking about them preparing a field trip to some colonial mansion in Pennsylvania. And they were saying that the people who would go had to dress, you know, in colonial clothing. So my reaction was, well, as a black person, a person of African descent, clearly I cannot be wearing no colonial clothing, nor could my children. We were enslaved. And most likely, you know, we had next to nothing on. So I asked the question, what about the black children? How are we, you know? And of course, you know, my question was all unwelcome. I got the message clearly that it was not meant for us. You know, it's meant for the white people who want to go.
Oh, so you were welcome on the trip.
Colonial past. Hmm?
You weren't welcome on the trip.
No, I was not. And you know what? And I didn't want to go either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt this was not meant for me. Not for my children, and so of course, but you know, I'm just giving an example,
right,
of how, you know, our interests really can diverge in profound ways.
Mm-hmm. And so we
do have our own organizations. That in Philadelphia, we had one called Freedom Homeschoolers. It was an all-black organization, and we did things together.
That's great. That's great. Want to let the listeners know, if you have a quick question or comment for our guest today, Professor Mazama, give us a call at 704-951-5030. If you are already dialed into the conference line, just hit *6 and 1 and we will bring you on air. Now, what kind of increase are we looking at? And when did this black homeschooler movement start? Did it start in the 80s, 90s? And how, in terms of percentage, How is the movement growing?
It is growing quite fast, you know. It is growing quite fast. If you think that maybe 10 years ago we had about 75,000 black children being homeschooled, and now we have probably not far from 250,000,
mm-hmm.
You can tell that clearly there's an interest on the part of black parents, you know, in homeschooling. Because, you know, we look at our options, you know, okay, we did the public school thing, it's a disaster. We tried the public school, the private schools, one, they're very expensive, and secondly, they can be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They can be even worse. I mean, the worst story that I heard from parents were really stories that happened in private schools. The parents were paying like an arm and leg, like $20,000, $30,000 mm-hmm. a year for their children to be insulted and offended. So that's not an option either, you know. And so you ask yourself, okay, what do I do? And you know, that was our story personally when we started homeschooling. Our son was 8. And he didn't go to any white school. I always made sure of that. He went to an Afrocentric school, but the teacher he had was so incompetent. And I said, you know, it's kind of, that has to stop. They were pretty much doing what public schools do, which is basically to teach to the test. So there was no real learning going on.
Question.
I was very disturbed by that.
Question on that, because, you know, as we look at the all those black teachers that were arrested and eventually convicted in mm-hmm. changing test scores. So in homeschooling, what are they exempt from? No Child Left Behind? What kind of regulations?
Yes, we are pretty much exempt, but it varies by state. You know, some states like New Jersey has absolutely no you know, regulation. You homeschool, they don't even want to hear about it. It's your business. In some states like Pennsylvania, they will ask that you get your child started at certain grades, like grade fifth grade, eighth grade, 11th grade, and then that's it. So they would go you know, to a public school when it's TSSA time and take the test, and then that's it. So it depends on the state. You know, some states are more, you know, lenient than others. But yeah, there's no pressure. You know, we don't teach to the test because, you know, we give whatever test we want to give. And we measure and we know what success means for us. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean just academic success. We're looking at other dimensions of our children as well. You know, how social are they? How spiritual are they? How emotionally balanced are they? How physically fit are they? Artistically, you know, stimulated out there, you know, so all that, you know, we look personally, you know, and I know most parents do that. We don't just focus on how well they can read and count. It goes way beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back to something you had brought up earlier, and that's about the attitudes of the teachers themselves. You mentioned, you know, that 95% of the public school teachers are white. 85% are white, mostly female, and yeah. They come into it with racism and biases that we see in the general society. And so, I mean, how it seems to me from some of the news stories that I've been reading about cases of children being called niggers and you know, just being terrorized, that these campuses in these individual cases I've been reading about did not take it serious. One principal told a black child that, oh, those are just words, just ignore it. A note was left in her locker saying niggers don't belong here. And that was the attitude of the principal. And so, you know, like, I was discussing it with a family member and they were saying, you know, I thought they were supposed to be taking bullying serious, but when it comes to racist bullying, it doesn't seem that they take it serious. Could that be because of their, you know, spoken or unspoken biases and racism?
Absolutely. You know, the first reaction of most white people, and this is what a white scholar by the name of Joe Fagan says himself in the many books he's written about the topic of white racism, he said the first reaction of white people, most of them, is to deny their racism. So it's very difficult to have an honest, you know, discussion about the racist biases and attitudes and behaviors that they really have towards our children. Now, it's all the more complicated and difficult that, you know, a teacher has a tremendous impact on a child, you know. They can basically destroy a child if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They have that power. So, and I have seen it, I have heard many stories, you know, of children going in bright, you know, and then leaving 2 or 3 years later completely destroyed, turned off, not wanting to learn anything, totally disgusted, you know. So, yes, I've heard stories. I remember one case, a little boy, 5-year-old going to a private school here in Philadelphia, a Quaker school, and it was Black History Month, and the teachers, and he was the only black child, and the teachers and the white students had put signs up on the walls that said, "No blacks allowed," Mm-mm-mm. "Whites only," you know. And of course, the child was very much, you know, shocked and stunned and uncomfortable in that context. The mother intervened. The teacher denied it. She said she didn't know anything about it. It was just an illustration, you know, of Jim Crow. She didn't take it seriously. But anyway, the boy stayed in that school, became very depressed because he was subjected to a lot of, you know, racist bullying. And when the mother confronted the principal, the principal just told her, you know what, bullying is part of life, of the school experience. Wow. And your son should just learn to cope with it. And that was it. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the boy became extremely depressed to the point that he wanted to kill himself. And the parents had to pull him out, and they started homeschooling him. And he was maybe 14 at that point. But a lot of damage had been done. But that was the attitude, that bullying is part of life.
Well, I want to talk about that more. We do need to take a short station identification break. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, I think I only know about these three cases is because of the actions that parents mm-hmm. Took. And I think it's important for those who may have a child that's trapped in the public school system, that they know how to deal with this whenever one of their children are, you know, attacked and they're not getting the response that they, the appropriate response to the incidents. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting on the Black Talk Radio Network. We are speaking with Professor Mazama about black families and increasingly looking to homeschool their children to protect them from racism and white supremacy. We'll be right back. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back. Professor Mazama, a couple of these cases I'm looking at is where there was a sixth grade black female, and I told you about, you know, the racist notes left on her locker, "Nigger, you don't belong here," other mm-hmm. students calling her nigger and things of that nature. They, you know, the principal told her to just ignore it. It's no big deal. But she went to her mother, who's co-parenting. They don't cohabitate, but they are co-parenting, the parents of this child. So then they went to the principal, weren't satisfied, went over his head, and they kept getting the runaround around to the point that they even were banned from campus. And so they filed a lawsuit. I just heard today about a case of a young man. I'm going to play that clip for you and the listeners in case y'all haven't heard about it, about, you know, this eighth grade black student who caught it on video. And, you know, I think that the parents' reactions were great. And, you know, just want to inform people about what to do, because I think too many times we become discouraged and we don't be the advocates for our children that we need to be, you know, that when yeah. we don't get, you know, the answer that we first want, well, we drop the matter and go on. So let me run this clip of this just came out today of this recent incident. This young man is a black young man. He's in the eighth grade. Let me find that clip. Here it is. Let me run this for you.
This morning, instead of being in school with classmates here at Bloomfield Hills Middle School, eighth grader Phoenix Williams was at home. Home working to keep up on assignments, too frightened to return to the classroom.
I really don't feel safe going back to school at all, because both of them are going to be there.
Phoenix is talking about the two classmates he videotaped calling him the N-word. They were suspended, but those close to the case say both students returned to class today. The district and Phoenix's mother both contacted police, and an investigation was launched. Since Phoenix was repeatedly called the N-word, verbally harassed, and allegedly threatened that his phone would be broken if he told, some believe these minors may face ethnic intimidation charges. Legal expert Neil Rockine says the video that Phoenix captured helps tell the story.
I'm so pleased that this young man had the wherewithal to take a video. Because the video tells us that it happened. Now the question is, how bad was it?
We do know that police interviewed Phoenix, those on board the school bus, including two chaperones and the driver. What did they see? What did they hear? As for the district, the superintendent does say action was taken, but that the punishment will not be revealed.
They tout themselves as award-winning. And this is as a clear black eye on the district's, you know, on the conduct of students within the district. Yeah. And I think that they want it to go away.
Our investigation will continue new tonight at 6 o'clock. We'll be talking with a clinical psychologist. She's going to offer insight about how you can talk to your children about this important issue. We're live here tonight in Bloomfield Hills. Hank Winchester, back to you.
All right, Hank. Well, let's dig a little deeper now with both Phoenix and his mother. They're standing by with Carmen. Carmen?
That's right. Devin Phoenix and his mother, Shanari Williams, join us now. And I want to thank you both for coming in. And Phoenix, I've got to tell you how much I admire your courage to come forward with this. Most kids would probably rather not do this. And Shanari, I know that you have to admire him too. Where do you want this to go from here, though?
Yeah, well, let me just first say we are so grateful to the community and for, you know, Channel 4 and just the outpouring of support we've received from other parents and just the community at large. And what we're just simply asking is that they take a no-tolerance policy to these types of behaviors. We've seen it happen recently on the university level, and they did a good job of sending the message that this will not be tolerated. It's not okay.
How could this have been handled differently, do you think?
I could have gotten up and tried to hit both of the kids.
You probably thought about that, didn't you?
I really did think about doing that, but then I realized that I didn't know what was going to happen after that, and I was worried that it was going to somehow get turned back on me as me being the aggressor or the person who started everything.
So how long did you suffer with this, Phoenix, before telling your mom or even letting the school know, the teacher, for example?
Oh, about the incident?
Mm-hmm.
Just right after it happened and I got off of the bus, I got in the car and my Nana had drove me home, I had started telling her about it.
She's here too, we should tell you. And Mom, when did you learn about it?
Sadly, I was out of town on business and received a phone call Friday evening. They had a festival performance from the school and then the bus right there and back. And so I received the call once my mom picked him up, and he was totally distraught, upset, and he forwarded me a copy of the video footage. And as you can imagine, I was deeply grieved, especially to know I wasn't even in town to do much, and that he had just experienced this on a bus that had two adult parent chaperones and a bus driver, and no one interfered or helped.
Parents on the bus, did they know what happened?
No, they didn't.
No idea. Okay, but now everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
So what will it take, Phoenix? I know you're not in school right now. You're at home. What will it take to get you back in the classroom and back to being with your friends and your classmates?
Well, I would like for both of the students to be expelled and for the staff and the parents and the students to also go through training in diversity, and I would like to see a no tolerance for racism and racial.
Absolutely.
And that video was fairly long, but I didn't want to play it all. I'm sure, Professor, that you've heard many stories like that in you know, among the 74 families that you interviewed.
Absolutely. It's just horrible stories, you know, the children being called monkeys by the teachers themselves. I witnessed a situation not too long ago of a child, a black child, a black boy, around 10 o'clock, walking on all fours in a hallway of a school behind a white female teacher. And I'm telling you, it was so appalling. All that was missing was basically a collar and a leash around his neck, like he was some type of animal. And when I asked where he was being taken, they told me he was being taken to a behavior modification room. It's just very degrading thing.
What? A behavior modification room.
Yeah. You know, just like you would train an animal that, you know, is going to perform at the zoo or the circus or something.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, but he was walking on all fours as if he were a dog, you know?
My God.
And I'm like, why can't he be walking, you know, normally like a human being? But he was being reduced to the status of an animal. This is how little she thought of him. Now, can you imagine someone like that being responsible for teaching black children? I was appalled, and I heard so many stories, you know, there's an incredible amount of cruelty towards our children. And what is really heartbreaking is that we, the parents, don't have a clue. We don't have a clue of what's happening to our children in those schools.
Well, that brings me back to the video.
We wonder why do our children act up? Why don't they want to learn? Why aren't they interested?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they want to go to school? Why don't they drop out, you know? But all that, you know, you accumulate all those experiences over the years, and you're messed up.
Mm-hmm. Now, the response of that young man, I thought, was right on point. As soon as it happened, well, first of all, he had the wherewithal to record it. And we know, you know, video recordings has been in the news a lot lately pertaining to police brutality leading to the dash cam, you know, the body cams, fitting police officers with body cams. And so I'm sitting here thinking, you know, these students, of course, they're not supposed to have phones, you know, in the classroom, but he felt like he had to record it, which I thought was great on his part to document it. But then once it happened, he immediately told his nana, his family member, who then called his mother. So I thought that that was the correct response to what happened to that young man. What are your thoughts on how they handled it?
Well, you know, I think he did the right thing. Now, but I have mixed feelings.
Okay.
Because my feelings are this. How much energy, how much anxiety, how much money will his family have to spend on this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the expense of him really being educated in a peaceful and safe place. You know, and that's the dilemma of many, many black parents, and that's why we decide to pull out. You know, are we going to fight every racist incident? Mm-hmm. Only the energy that it takes, the stress that it, you know, causes us. And then our children are not being educated in the midst of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, yes, we must fight back. We must denounce. We must, you know, we must speak up. But at the same time, at what cost? Wouldn't it be better for us to create our own spaces, whether at home, whether, you know, with other black parents who are like-minded, and really try to build our children up, spare them all those, you know, this aggravation, spare them being called names, spare them being treated like animals, spare them having their humanity and intelligence questioned every single day, and build them up. You know, build them up, help them reach their potential. That's why black, you know, homeschooling is more and more appealing to black parents.
For how difficult is it, you know, to homeschool? And given that all of us don't have the resources that it may take for us to homeschool our child, or we may not be that educated ourselves, we may be intimidated by the ideal of educating our own children. And so, I mean, is it difficult? How do you help them through that sort of fear, to get over that sort of fear? And for those who are not really educated, have you seen any instances where black homeschoolers were like, you know, I guess coming up with a way to educate each other's children, you know, some sort of homeschooling collective so that...
Absolutely. You have co-ops.
Okay,
you
co-ops.
Know, you can also find tutors.
Mm-hmm.
We are very resourceful. Most states ask, you know, for a high school diploma,
okay.
You know? They don't ask for more. And there's one thing that we do have for our children that most teachers, especially white teachers, don't have when we have unconditional love for them.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we want the best for them. And believe me, these are two very important factors in the educational process. Okay. And our children know that. They know we want the best for them, and they know we love them, and they see us go out of our way to do things, to learn things ourselves that we will teach them. And we learn with them. That's the beautiful thing about homeschooling, is that you learn along with your child. And that brings you very close to each other. I have heard this, you know, I've homeschooled three children. I'm still in the process of homeschooling my two youngest one. And it's a beautiful thing. We learn together, you know. So we should understand that. And we should not be intimidated by the fact that we don't have teaching credentials, because to be honest with you, teachers are among the least educated people that I know.
Say that again.
I would say that teachers are among the least educated people that I know.
Why,
they know very little.
That? Why is that?
Because I think their training is poor.
Mm-hmm.
They know very little. They really do.
Hmm.
They really do. Beyond, you know, the little bit they're going to share with your child, they know very little. And I know that because I work with teachers. Yeah, we ask them basic questions. Where did life start? They can tell you. Their life started in Africa. You say, well, how long ago was that? Oh, they look at you like, what is that? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm telling you, really. So I'm not impressed. I don't feel that I fall short because, you know, I don't have a teacher certification or anything like that. And I think nobody should feel that way. Some teachers are great. They go out of their way. They educate themselves. But for the most part, they don't, you know. And what is expected of them is so little anyway. What is expected of them is that those kids do well on that test, which itself is a very narrow segment of knowledge. And that's it. So there's nothing to be intimidated about. You know, we love our children, we want the best, and we can learn with them. And when children are young, really, how much do we need to know to teach them? It's when they get older. But at that point, it's something that homeschoolers say a lot. Children learn to teach themselves. Because homeschooled children become very independent as learners, you know. We're not always standing up, you know, near them, looking over their shoulder. We give them their work, you know, they do it. We go over it with them, and so on and so forth. So they learn to direct themselves. And many parents, and I can attest to this myself because that was the case with my son before he went to college. You know, I had very little interaction with him, and parents as their children grow, they don't teach as much. The children teach themselves what they need to know, what they want to know, and you trust them. And it works out. It works out because, guess what? Black homeschool children do much better academically than black children who go to public schools. There's an article that just came out that surveyed, you know, 81 black children and compared, and the results were very clear. So clearly, black parents are quite capable of teaching black children, and they do a better job than teachers.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say they perform better, are we looking at standardized testing? You mentioned the SATs that they take.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but in college they also do better.
And that was going to be my next question: is how does that does do black children who are homeschooled seem better prepared to enter into higher, you know, learning institutions, colleges, and universities, and are they better prepared to socially to deal with campus life?
Yes. Homeschooled children are extremely social, you know. There's this stereotype that if you're homeschooled, you're just home by yourself. And it's distorted from the truth, you know. There are so many activities organized just for homeschooled children, because realize that nationwide there are more than 2 million children in this country that do not go to school. So there's a market there that many agencies are really tapping into. And so there are many activities, you know, like my children right now do acting just for homeschoolers. They do tennis just for homeschoolers. They do sculpture just for homeschoolers. And there are many other activities, you know, that I have not put them in. But the social part is really not a problem at all. Yes, they are better prepared, I believe, and studies have shown that as well. because of what I talked about before, which is that they are capable of working on their own. Mm-hmm. And that's a big challenge when you go to college. I'm a college professor. I see it every time. Students have a hard time organizing their time, organizing their work, turning in their assignments on time, because they were so used to an adult always telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. Now you're in college, nobody's going to remind you mm-hmm. that there's a deadline tonight. You miss it, it's on you.
Right.
Being homeschooled, because you have learned so much, you've studied so much on your own, you've already had that discipline, if you wish, or those habits in place, you know? Mm-hmm. So at least in that regard. Now, academically, they're just as prepared, you know? Sometimes, again, there have been studies that say that homeschooled students, generally speaking, do better in math than non-homeschooled children. Why? I don't know, but, you know, this is what the study says, what the research says. So at least I will say this. Of course, I'm biased because I'm homeschooling, but at least homeschooled students do at least as well as students who went to school. Let me put it like that. And okay. I know it's safe.
Okay. And one of the last questions I want to ask you in terms of, I want to bring it back to our teachers, because our black teachers don't seem to be faring too well in the system either. At least in my opinion, they don't. And Atlanta is a perfect example of that, with the pressures that they face, you know, under No Child Left Behind. And then you mentioned something about, you know, a market being there for homeschooling. And I have asked this question myself, is why does it seem like, and this could be unfair, but it's my perception, but why does it seem like black people want to protect the public education? Whenever there's a challenge to public education, black people seem to be at the forefront. No, we don't want school vouchers. We don't want charter schools. We don't want this or that. It seems like the masses, and again, my perception could be wrong, is that we want to protect it. And then I'm like, I have asked the question, well, why don't black teachers come out of that system that they know is failing black children and start black Afrocentric charter schools? And so now I'm talking to you, professor, about homeschooling. I mean, why not start a network, you know, within absolutely. Your state?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there would be a big market for a teacher or a group of teachers who would like to cater to our needs as black homeschoolers, like to put together a black, you know, African-centered, Afrocentric curriculum for us. There's a huge demand for that.
Wow.
You know, so yes, there are many things we could do that would be much more useful, you know, instead of staying in a system that is clearly failing us, that was meant to fail us, you know. Because people say, oh, the schools are failing black children, but they're not failing black children. They're doing their job, really. They're doing their job.
You know what that reminds me of? When Eric Holder gave a speech at a conference of attorneys, and he said that the criminal justice system is broken. Well, the next week, the Association of Assistant U.S. Attorneys sent him a open letter saying the system not broke. It's working exactly how it's supposed to work.
That's right. And we haven't even talked about the school-to-prison pipeline.
Right, right.
Which is really setting our children up for a life, you know, of criminality. When you are 6 years old, you have a tantrum, they call the police, they put handcuffs on you, and you have a criminal record at 6 years of age?
Wow. Charged with felonies, yes.
Can you believe that? It happened to a little black girl. And black boys, you know, have it particularly hard, you know. I mean, so basically, the school-to-prison pipeline basically orients our children at a very early age towards the prison system. That's what it is. They set us up. They set our children up so they have a criminal record and they cannot make any move but go to prison.
Well, I would certainly like to have you back on the program. This isn't your first time on the Black Talk Radio Network. You were actually a guest on Time for Awakening Radio, Brother Elliot and them. So I didn't know if you knew that they were part of this network. They're based up there in Philadelphia as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But I certainly...
so much. I would love to come back and talk about these issues because they're very, very critical issues. And as black people, we really have to face the reality, you know, and ask ourselves, you know, what are we doing for our children? What are we doing for ourselves, for our future as a people? You know, how do we see our future?
Mm-hmm. How can people keep up with you? Are you on social media? How can they keep up with your work? I mentioned, you know, the issue that I was reading from today, the Journal of African American Males in Education.
African American Males, there's an article I co-authored with my husband. We've published a lot. We have a book that came out in September of 2014. Mm-hmm. Called African American Homeschoolers, Motivations, mm-hmm. Challenges, and Opportunities.
So how can we purchase that book, and how can we keep up?
I think if you go, on the internet and you type up the title of the book, again, it's African American Homeschoolers, Motivations, Challenges, okay. and Opportunities, you will find the book. You also see articles. We wrote this one article, Journal of Black Studies. That was the first piece we actually did on black homeschooling. And the title was African-American Homeschooling as Racial Protectionism, where we really talked about this, black parents keeping their children home to protect them from the harmful mm-hmm. effects of racism. Mm-hmm. So we looked at the teacher's attitudes, the curriculum, which is really appalling, you know, I mean, in 2015, in a world that is becoming, in a nation that is becoming increasingly brown and black, that you still have this notion, you know, that everything came from white people, you know, mm-hmm. And we looked at the school to prison pipeline and in that one article in the Journal of Black Studies. So there are many things, you know, that we listeners can read, you know, if they are interested.
Well, I was certainly encouraged in seeing your article and knowing that black people are having this conversation, and they're coming to the mm-hmm. logical conclusion that our children, our needs are not being served, and they're actually being harmed in the public mm-hmm. education system. So it was just refreshing to see that sort of movement and to hear that it's growing. So thank
it
you very fine. Much.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. All right,
you have a great day. Right, that was Dr. Mazama, and talking about the increase of black families who are homeschooling their children. Certainly is an option, a viable solution. Glad to hear the success stories and to know that black people are unifying around this issue. And I just think that this is a message that needs to be heard by the masses, but a conversation perhaps that will never be had on your mainstream corporate news shows that have conversations on education and policy, public policy and whatnot. Because again, it seems to me that the establishment, for whatever reasons, whether they want to do not want to admit that the whole push towards integration was wrong, and it has been a massive failure for black children. Instead of pushing for integration, you should have been pushing for equal funding. You know, your tax dollars being reinvested right back into your school. And so I just thought that many people in the mainstream, they want to continue to protect this system, and they know it's failing our children. They know it's failing our children. But yet, you know, they give us the impression that this is our only option. We have to send our children to these schools when in fact we do not have to. So I hope that those of you out there who have children and your children are experiencing these problems, that this is something you will look into and you know, see if there is some kind of support system for black homeschoolers in your area. If it's not, hell, have a conversation with other black families and start a black homeschooling association. Because again, you know, like they say about insanity, doing the same things over and over, expecting a different result, we cannot afford to keep doing that. Our children cannot afford to keep being put through this cycle of abuse. You know, again, going back to South Africa and they, you know, pulling down the statue of the white supremacist Cecil Rhodes. And, you know, this is part of the reason why racism is so systemic and continues to persist, because if it's in the school system like that, then little racist suspects are being produced every day. White supremacy is being reinforced in their minds every day. So as long as that continues to happen, then we will forever be plagued by racism and white supremacy. So I say separate yourself from this system as much as possible, especially when it comes to our children. I want to thank again our guest, Professor Mazama, for joining us, and Sister Cece for putting the program together for us today, contacting our guests and setting it up. And we will be back on air tomorrow, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Black Talk Radio News. Peace and blessings to all. Be safe out there, because we do live behind enemy lines.
I got so much trouble on my mind, refuse to lose. Here's your ticket. Hear the drummer get wicked.